Desi, noun. A person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here.
You guys just want me to jump into this deep shit right now.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. So, you guys are asking me to read a poem that I wrote for my mom's funeral.
Yes.
So I'm going to get all weepy. Well, hopefully not. Let's see. So I called it Mother's Child. I am my mother's child, nothing more, nothing less. And for that privilege, I have been blessed. I fell from your womb and into your arms while you tried to spare me all life's harm. You are all I've known from this life's start, your spirit now loud in my broken heart. I have begged God to let me see you again, and I believe I will, but I do not know when. I would crawl on my knees over broken glass to hold your soft hand one time last. Although I know this will not soon be, I yearn to find your eyes watching me, quietly sitting and observing it all, so I believed I would never fall. As you were there with your strong, quiet love, I will never be what I once was. You bore one daughter and one son, whose ties to childhood are today undone. We cling to each other in this deadly storm, reminding ourselves from whom we were born. Our beautiful mother, who was always there, is gone, our lives stripped bare. We scramble to find the parts you helped build. We pray we can keep going without your will. After nurturing us so we could bloom, you have returned home far too soon. Around every corner and in every place, we will search and plead to find your face. Our solace is that you fly free and high, although we will never know why. We will remember years after your death, the tears of blood that we have wept. Despite this twist in our young stories, we promise to honor your soul and glory. Nothing can change what you did give. We are that for as long as we live. We are our mother's children, nothing more, nothing less. And for that privilege, we are forever blessed.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of American Desis. And welcome to what I imagine will be a very different show than we've had in the past. I'm truly blessed and honored to have with us an incredible writer who I didn't know about until a colleague of mine had said, hey, you need to read this book, Ashes. And Akash and I started reading this book, and we said, well, we need to talk with this woman. And so we welcome to our show today, Mala Mukherjee.
Hi. How you guys?
Thank you for being here, Mala. First of all, I cried several times reading this book, and let's just let everybody know about it. I'm not even going to pretend I didn't. But the first question Arjun and I wanted to ask is, why did you write this book?
Initially, I started the book because my beloved bulldog, as you read about in the book,
Boo.
Boo Boo.
Boo.
She died 3.5 years to the day that my mother committed suicide.
Right.
So a friend of mine was afraid that I would follow my mother's choice and leave voluntarily. And so she dared me to write a book. So that's why I started it. But about 25 revisions in, I realized that I just didn't want my mother's passing to be for nothing. I wanted it to mean something. I wanted her to have a voice, to say something she couldn't say. And I wanted her to know how much I loved her. And it was the best thing I could do, was just capture that for her.
It's a truly, Akash and I were talking as we were reading it, just about the courage it takes to write something like this, to share. I mean, him and I often talk about, as young men and dealing in the professions that we do, vulnerability is something that we talk about a lot. And the vulnerability that's required to share, and the courage it takes to be that vulnerable. Where did you find that courage to be as vulnerable as you were with this book?
Well, I'd have to ask you why you feel it takes vulnerability. I mean, I just told the truth.
I think it takes it is vulnerable to tell the truth, though. And what it means is it's a stripping away of what you are masks and allowing people to see something. I think that's what I mean when I say that's the vulnerability, to allow people to hear this. And see that part of you and see, because
especially in this case, it's like taking the Band-Aid off of a wound. It's very raw. Someone can poke at it. You can get hurt much more easily. So most of us put on these masks to cope. For you to write a book and say all this stuff, especially honestly from an Indian, from a South Asian family, we're taught, I'm taught, don't say, if it's family business, it's family business. No one needs to know. I still carry that with me. So,
well, I couldn't have written this if she weren't dead, let's be honest. And I wouldn't be sitting here if she weren't dead. To me, I feel more fragile if I don't tell the truth, irrespective of how anyone responds. I feel it weakens us if we don't tell the truth.
And I think that that's a really, because I think a lot of us are taught not to to hide things. And not just, I mean, especially in the South Asian culture, and, you know, that's where our bent is coming from in this podcast. But a lot of people are taught, and especially as men, you know, don't show, you know, be a man. Don't, it's, you know, men don't cry. These kind of ideas that are, you know.
Well, let's even go to this place. I mean, as immigrants, I don't know where you guys grew up, but I grew up in an all-white neighborhood, as you know, from Reading Ashes. And so I had to look and feel bulletproof.
Right.
So it wasn't certain, you know, I wasn't encouraged to show my feelings and. Right. But what I realized was that if I could show my feelings and have my feelings, then no one could touch me. No one could harm me. There was nothing hidden.
And that's the strength and vulnerability that a lot of people talk about.
And strength and truth.
Strength and truth. You like to separate those two words. Can you talk about why?
Which two words?
Vulnerability and truth. You've corrupted me now twice with that.
Have I?
Yeah.
I don't equate truth with being vulnerable. I don't know, if you're building a structure and you think of it as vulnerable, it means that there are gaps in it, right? Or there's something beneath that structure that could rise up. You build it on something that has something unseen beneath it, then you're vulnerable. But the truth is visible. So if you can see it, you can touch it, you can taste it, you can call it out. Like, what's vulnerable about that? Is my ego vulnerable? I guess. I mean, are people going to say, oh, that girl, and she did this, and she slept with all those guys, and her mom killed herself, and no good Indian girl would say something like that? Sure, what does that really affect? My reputation? Who cares? I mean, because again, if it's the truth, what's someone going to poke holes at? The essence of who I am or some mask? Well, then take the mask off, because the mask is what's vulnerable.
It's a strong distinction, yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah, it is the mask that's vulnerable, not the...
Because it's not you. It's not flesh. It's not your essence. It's not filled with your soul. It's a mask.
So whose podcast is this shit, man? I'm ready to go home. I mean, I'm learning some shit right now. Goddamn. What up, audience?
So that's a wrap.
7 minutes in, we'll call this a wrap for the day. Y'all can pay us later. Jesus.
Sorry.
No. It's no. This is. I mean, that's wisdom.
I don't know what it is. I mean,
what it feels like. That's fine. Cool. That's what it feels like to me. Is that feels like wisdom.
What does wisdom mean to you, though?
Wisdom to me means experience. You know, and it comes from like an understanding of the world that's deeper, coming from experience.
I don't know if I understand the world, but I work hard at understanding myself.
I would argue that if you understand yourself, you understand the world.
Indeed.
So by saying that you understand yourself, you therefore do understand the world.
Well, wasn't it the woman who found baby Krishna said she looked in her mouth and she could see the universe? Because there it was within him, right?
Yeah, sure. Isn't
it the Bible that says that God is within us?
Yes.
I'm going to just believe whatever you say.
I don't know. You're in.
Why not?
All right.
I wanted to go to the book, and okay. I wanted to read something that was, I mean... Page 6, guys. We're talking page 6, and this hit me in a deep way. On the pool deck, I inspected every other person on our team. Not one of them had brown skin. They were tanned, but white. I wondered if they thought the same things the boys at school thought. I put my head down and couldn't smile or wave when other kids said hello. I didn't hesitate to jump into the cold water for the first time in the 2 years since I joined the team. It felt good to bury my body in the pool and forget about my skin. To be in a position where you're so ashamed of the most visible part of us, the largest organ of our body, is right? At a young age, is incredibly, it was hard not to be affected, even at, like, again, page 6, by just how much hurt that causes and must have caused.
I mean, have you guys not experienced something similar?
Not to this extreme.
Not to this extreme and not at this young of an age, I don't think.
For me, it happened in high school.
But we're different generations, right?
Yes, we are.
Right.
Yes, we
so
are.
I was born in 1969 before the Civil Rights Act and all that good stuff. And listen, you know, just because a law is passed doesn't mean everyone follows it.
Of course.
Right. So some of this was just, that was ripe then, you know? I mean, not that it still isn't, but now at least people have the good grace to be subtle about it. Then not so much. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, just to bring it to present day, and I know we're supposed to be talking about the book, but...
No, not at all.
You can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
You got the floor, girl. So a lot of that wound came up for me recently because, you know, Kylie and I are doing this thing called Undealt, and we just started doing some video. And it was amazing how much that wound just surfaced, you know, that some of those deep cuts we have, they just, you know, they come up and it bubbled up. So, yeah, I mean, I think in that moment, because that verse, or not that verse, that portion that you read follows the first time I realized that my skin was a different color. So at school that day, there was an incident where I was called a brownie.
Right.
So I think that it was that much more shocking for me because I just didn't know that I was a different color until someone pointed it out to me. So really, isn't that the wound? We're just a person until someone tells us that they think we're less than.
Now, my question is, when did you learn? You seem like a really confident woman. When did you learn to be confident with, I know you mentioned in the book something about Rick and how that healed an old wound. But is that when you got more confident in being different, being brown?
Oh, I think Rick, you mean the married man that I had an affair with?
Yes.
I mean, I think that, you know, maybe he was an interesting reflection simply because he was physically beautiful. No, I think that the wound is always going to be healing, but it was really more about, again, searching within myself as to, well, who am I and what matters to me? And understanding that this is a subjective world we live in, right? Maybe someone's going to think Giselle's really pretty. Maybe somebody else won't. And that I think some of the, or whatever, that Obama's smart and someone else is going to say, I think he's a ding-dong. You know, it was more in claiming my individuality that I was able to find a sense of myself. So I don't know if I'm confident or not, but I try to be certain of who I am in each moment. And I try not to compromise that.
How much did writing the book help you with that?
Not at all.
Not at
I
all.
I would say it stripped me down more than anything.
Really?
Well, because I didn't just, it wasn't a journal entry, right? It was, I tried to look at it like a piece of literature. And so the first of all, learning the craft of writing a novel isn't a small thing. You know, you want to say you're writing a book, you're writing a novel, you're in some pretty extreme company. So I never wanted to insult those who came before me by saying I was writing a book that didn't at least honor what they had done. And so the craft of any art, to honor it, you have to learn it. And then so in that craft, as everybody knows, revisions. And so if you revise the same thing over and over again, there's not catharsis in that. There's just...
It's painful.
It's painful and it keeps you there. It keeps you in those moments. You know, it's going to sound crass, but you know, the last couple years of crafting that book, I was just like, I'm so sick of this girl and her dead mother. You know, like enough already, man. Like, so no, because catharsis was to be able to sit down and write it. You know, took some catharsis, and then afterwards there was a lot of catharsis in understanding where that book held me in place and what I actually needed to experience with regard to my mother's passing. You know, the other thing is what the book is, what, 1,000 scenes maybe? And so I completed it, well, the story completes when I was about 36 years old, so say we have 1,000,000 scenes in our life by then, or 10 million scenes. I was also very much limiting myself to those particular scenes that I chose with consciousness and with intention. And so it was kind of nice to reclaim the rest of my life too, all the scenes I left out.
Your relationship with Raj was really, you know, I have 2 elder sisters, and the relationship with Raj is really beautifully crafted, and just that growth and that, I mean, when... The way, I broke down when he says, you always knew what was going on and no one believed you, I'm sorry. just the grace that he had, and that, can you speak to the importance of
it seemed
of
like it kind of came out of nowhere. Like,
well, it seemed like it surprised you.
Yeah.
You weren't expecting that much grace or compassion. You said, my mother raised Raj to be, to shine in this way, and she didn't get to see him like that. Can you just speak to the relationship and what that's meant to you?
I think there are different components to what you asked me. First of all, sure. I think as a big sister, you know, we see our little brother in a certain way, and perhaps it's annoying to the little brothers, but it's hard for us to see the full growth. They're stepping into manhood. And so that part, I think, was what surprised me,
mm-hmm.
was that he could be so mature and such a steady force. But the other part of it is, too, at least my experience, I really didn't at that time expect that I was seen by anybody, certainly not anybody in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So that my brother was able to see, and that he had seen me all those years, that right. because when I would point things out, and I think many people who have a certain sensitivity or just an inner awareness or an outer awareness, we don't think anyone hears us because we're saying it, but it doesn't seem like anyone's listening. And so also that what surprised me that my brother bore witness that whole time, and that he stepped forward at the exact right moment to state what he had witnessed. It was one of the most beautiful moments of my life, and it remains that.
I in talking about being seen and being born witness too, that there's some, to me, those are the components that create safety. In my mind, I want to talk about, I know I'm jumping around a lot with the book, so I apologize, but
it's okay.
That summer that you spent in India with Pia and your Mossies and your mama, and just what did India mean to you in your childhood?
Oh.
Was it safety? Was it more than safety? Was it a paradise? Or speak to India for us.
It was love.
Love.
It was real. Like, it made everything made sense in India, right? Like, it was as if we were on a deserted island or something, you know? Like, when we were here, something was missing. It could be that I could sense that something felt very missing from my mom, that our world of this nuclear family here in India, these separated from holidays and laughter and cousins and, you know, my Mashis and my Meshos. And but for her, those were her brothers and sisters, right? And she had a family of six children. And so I don't know if it was quiet for me or quiet for her because we were so connected, but it was quiet.
Mm.
And so it was love. It was life. It was family. You know, it wasn't just also that we were doted on, because that wasn't the case. Like, even though we weren't there all the time, and so those months were spent with people definitely catering to us in certain ways. It wasn't. It was actually when everybody was just normal with us, and they went about their routine and their days, and it just felt incredible to be connected to that. And, you know, honestly, just even knowing I was going to see you guys today, like, I don't know Indian people. And I was right. super excited just to see two brown faces.
Right.
Well, I wanted to ask you.
That was
going to
be my follow-up, is when, I know we talk about this, when we go to India, it's, especially the first time I went, that was the first time I was ever not a minority.
Right.
That was the first time when you saw a brown person, you wouldn't say, oh, there's an Indian person, oh, there's a brown dude. That's just a person. So did you think that had a lot to do with your love for India, especially at a young age?
It was the brown faces in the household. I got to be honest with you, in the streets of Calcutta, like Kolkata now, right?
Yeah.
Not to honor the English name. Well, I try to not honor what the British named certain Indian cities. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know,
fair.
They're revolutionary. I mean, but no, I mean, I kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. So I don't know what part of India you guys are from, but
UP.
Yeah.
Okay. So there, you know, maybe it's because I'm kind of tall for an Indian.
Oh, no, we stick out like sore thumbs. Yeah. I mean, like,
right.
I'm straight up Ferengi as soon as I get off. Anytime I speak Hindi, I mean, listen, I'm not walking around anybody with
right.
any airs that they assume I'm Indian. But
right. So there was that. You know, like, we got to talk about that a little bit if you really want to go there.
Let's
like,
go
yeah, there.
There
was the comfort of the brownness. That was just within the walls of our home. Out on the streets, it was more like, oh, so I don't belong here either.
But it's interesting you said, and we've spoken about this, when I go there, even when I'm walking around the streets, I just feel connected to the ground in a way that I don't
for
really
sure
here. You still feel that way. You go back to India? I mean, I guess
not enough. Not enough. The last time I was there was in 09, okay, and that was a tough trip. Simply because it's changing a lot, right? I mean, when's the last time you guys were there?
I was there 2 years ago.
09, you too? And you were there 2 years ago?
2013, yeah. I was there 3 times in 2013.
Yeah, right, you guys?
Brushing my own dirt off. Yes, just brushing my own dirt off.
What does that mean? I mean, I know it's a Jay-Z song, but like, I don't even know what he's talking about.
It's like, I'm just...
You're bragging.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Got it. I mean, listen, I know the song probably by heart, but I don't know.
Get it, girl. We'll have you rap too. Let's go.
No, that's
all
right. All
that
is Mala. I won't know what I'm saying.
Cameraman just zoomed in.
Yeah, we have a camera here and it's recording us. Recording me, actually.
Yeah, she don't give a fuck about us. I'll be real with you. She's talking about these brown faces you want to see. Ain't no camera
on
me.
Put on nice jackets for no reason. That's what happened. We put on nice jackets for
I took a damn shower, people. I took a damn shower.
I'm more in shock that that's a nice jacket.
Oh, my God.
This is leather. This is what's happening. In the community what I'm wearing. This is... Be impressive on camera. The genuine leather. This is upsetting my parents' leather.
Wait, wow, really?
Yeah, got it for free.
They don't.
So then it's good that it sticks within the
Indian
confines.
But you both have leather on.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Got it. Do you eat beef?
I don't eat red meat, but not because of a religious standpoint, simply because it's really bad for your heart. And like we have heart
Is your
issues.
Heart weak?
Well, just heart issues in the family, and so I just avoid stuff. I try to avoid fatty food and triglycerides in the same way.
So you want to live a long time?
I mean, I want to give myself the best opportunity. I don't always do that, but you know. I think some simple.
The world
ways.
Needs us. You know what I mean? That's basically what it comes down to.
I think it's adorable that
what
you
would
think
they
so.
Do without us?
I mean,
I think
you
it's
know,
fantastic that you think so.
They would
so.
Lose a podcast that 500 people listen to a week, man. That's just what's the world? How is the world to move on? Let's go back to India and Mala because you are our guest.
No.
You want to keep talking about how important we are to the world? I really don't think we should. I think we've exhausted that topic. I'm not going to lie. We were talking about India and what it means to you. And there was a gap. At least in the book, it felt like there was a gap from when you went in that summer till...
There wasn't, though. I mean, I didn't include every trip to India simply
okay.
because
okay, gotcha.
I was trying to keep to a certain psychological and spiritual arc of my journey.
Right. Oh, well then. Okay, that's interesting.
We went... gosh, if one of my meshos was sitting here, I don't know. Do you guys go through this? Like when we go, it's, well, do you remember when you were here in 73 and 78? Yeah. And why do they remember? They remember every date, what haircut
event.
I have. Right. But that's the thing. Like, why is it an event? So does it feel like home to us? Because that's the confusion, right? That why is it, it wouldn't be an event if we live there.
But that doesn't mean that doesn't make it any less home.
But it does.
Why?
Because when you go home, it's not an event. You
oh,
just
fuck
go
yeah,
home.
It's an event when I go home. Even
well, that's
because
you're
in
an
Tampa,
Indian son.
Yeah.
It's an event when my sister goes home. I'm not making it a male female thing. I'm literally just because it's home. And it's not only an event for my family, it's an event for
you
me.
Can leave home,
yeah, no, for sure. Home. It's always an event. But I mean, it's like an Uber event, right? Like we can go home to our parents' house, but they're not like, oh, you were here, and they're not gonna list the 5,000 times we went home.
I got an Indian mother,
yeah,
she will.
Yeah, real quick. And I think that's a frequency.
I do miss that. There's nothing like an Indian mother. And there no isn't. One understands
no
that.
No one gets it.
I
no.
feel like I get that a little bit with black grandmothers.
Do you?
Yes. And Jewish mothers.
Oh, gosh, I see a distinction. I do. Sorry.
I'm sure there's a distinction, but I get a feeling that
yeah,
I get
listen,
with them
it's in
the
same
like
ballpark for yeah. sure. But that Indian...
And Guyanese, like, I have friends that are from, like, the West Indies.
God, you are just so international. I'm out.
Okay.
Like,
well, guys, again,
23
minutes,
much.
We're out.
I ain't nothing but Indies.
I got
on a boat.
God, totally.
This is weird. I was not expecting Mala and Akash to form the alliance in this interview. That was not what I was expecting.
Actually, no,
are you feeling left out?
No, I'm good. I mean, that's nice that he has friends sometimes rather than me be the popular one.
I wanted to ask you a question, though, about yeah. when you went to India after you spread your mom's ashes. I remember early in the book you said, this is what felt like home. This is where I wanted to live. Did it cross your mind to just stay there? Because you still had a lot of family there. The main thing keeping you in America at that point was gone. So did it cross your mind
yeah.
that you could stay?
You know, it still does. I mean, I would say my cousin Pew,
right.
who
yeah.
she lives in the Middle East right now, but they just bought a flat in Kolkata. So I know when she told me that they went back to buy a flat, I was like, oh, right. It's always, it always crosses my mind that I could just go land there at any point.
What stops you?
The work I'm doing here right now. I just feel that that's where I'm supposed to be. And if I'm not, then I will be there.
Right. That's what I assume for what stops you now. But in the book, at that point, you hadn't discovered your work. So what stopped you then? Anything in particular?
Boo Boo. My doggy. There's no way I was going to leave her. That's not cool.
You couldn't bring?
On a plane?
Yeah.
A bulldog under a plane for 20 hours?
No, you put it. Well, that's, I mean, maybe they emotional support. I know dogs on planes every time, every flight.
But that
I
was
take
a while ago, right? It's true. And she was an incredibly aggressive dog, you guys. So.
Well, I'm sorry we
listen, I told myself that it was Boo that stopped me, and I just never really looked into.
Well, we ask the hard-hitting questions here on American Daisy. So let's explore that. No, I'm kidding. The rainbow.
Mm.
The rainbow. You started with the prologue. It was Susanna or Orlana who told you about the rainbow?
Shoshana, who then changed her name to Orlana, yeah.
Shoshana changed it.
She's since passed.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that was rough. That was intense.
She told you that it was the night, it was a week before you left. Is that correct? That she told you your mother will talk to you through rainbows?
Yes.
Can you walk our listeners through what happened on the boat?
So do we call it a boat? What is it called, you guys? Those little wooden things that they row out to the middle of the Ganges.
A boat. I don't know. I don't know enough about. Yeah, I don't know enough English.
So my dear friend, who I call Orlana in the book, she said to me that my mom would appear from the other side in the form of a rainbow. And so on this really hot day, because it was August of 1999, which... Mm-hmm. Kolkata is hot any time, but it was extra hot. Clear sky. We grabbed her canister of ashes and the little barge guy. We'll call it a barge and not a boat. He rowed my brother, my dad, and I out to the middle. And we opened the canister off the top of it. And I think it was my brother that looked up, was it? Mm-hmm.
In the book it was, yes.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I didn't reread the book to talk to you guys, and it was a long time ago. So I'm just putting myself back there. So my giant 6'3" brother leaned back on the wooden kind of step deck that he was sitting on. Yeah. And he said, and I had told him, because I told Raj everything about the rainbow, and he leaned back and he said, "Mala, look." And there was a rainbow. And there was no reason for that rainbow to be there, but it was as if listen, I don't even know if that's real, right? Like, did I see a rainbow? Yeah.
No, it's real to you. Hold on a second. It doesn't matter whether
No, I mean,
it's
as
real.
The years pass, you know what I'm saying? That it's as the years pass, you wonder, like, did I see it? Did we both see it? You know, because after someone's been gone for a decade and a half, it gets a little murky. Like, did you know them? Were they here? Was that a rainbow? Was she a great cook? You know, that's why I'm saying it. It's not that I don't have the belief in, right.
I want to ask you something. You mentioned this off the air, and then you just said it again. You have not revisited the book since you wrote it.
Since I finished. So after my friend Orlana died on February 13th of 2012, she had always said, "You've got to finish the book. You've got to finish the book." And so I guess another death prompted me to say, all right, let me complete this loop. So I ended up self-publishing it. So I'd been brokenhearted over the fact that the publishing world had gotten really close to publishing it many, many times. And then it didn't get a publishing deal. And so I just thought, what am I doing? Like, why am I being so in my ego? Like, just do this. Do this for your mom. Do this for Alana. Just finish it. So it wasn't that long ago. That's why I'm saying it.
Was that the process? Did you revisit and rewrite stuff, or was it just a process of now business-wise, on the business side of it? When did you finish writing it?
I gave it one last comb through. I gave it one last revision and one last edit just to look at it, you know, a few years later and from a different... I didn't change anything substantively at all. No.
There's a feeling of... I don't know I don't know the best word for this, but there's a feeling of kismet throughout the book. Neen was your sign. A week later, you see him. the rainbow, there's, how much of that is a part of your belief structure?
Gosh, you know, I think less and less.
Okay.
Because I think Nina's a great example. So Nina is someone that I, the first person that I dated, was with, or whatever, after my mom killed herself. And, you know, it's hard to interpret a sign, isn't it? Because in truth, Nina asked for to see him as a sign that I was supposed to not be a lawyer but work as a healer, right? Mm-hmm. But it turned into something far less benign.
Right.
So we could see it as a sign that it was going to change my life. But I think it's tricky to interpret signs.
Whether this, yes, the tricky to interpret signs, but the fact that it did arrive. I guess there's, I don't know.
I trust my, okay, this, what yeah. has shifted is I think I was looking outside of myself more then, meaning I was looking for the sign outside of myself. I was looking for the rainbow. I was to know that my mother was present. I was looking for Neen to show up to tell me that I should be a healer. And now I don't. I more go on my sense of myself and how I feel. But that was a journey. That was a journey to my own maturation and certainty.
I've often said that, or I've often learned, or I'm still learning, that it's dangerous to solve internal issues with external solutions.
I think that's beautifully put. How wise of you. That's some.
I have some.
That is some serious wisdom.
Guys, we are going to pause, and we're going to ask Mal if she can stick around to do another episode with us. There's so much more to tap into. We're going to drop our discussion episode in a couple days. You know what to do. Reach out to us on Twitter, on Facebook. Show us love.
Also, rate the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, review it, give it 5 stars, talk about how good looking we are in these jackets.
I also don't need this external love to solve my internal.
I do.
You guys realize they can't see you, don't you?
Oh, we'll take you selfies. Don't worry. Oh, okay. We said that at the same time. That's terrifying. We're getting it off the air. Like I said, as always, I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.